All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, October 6th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is 59 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. It's supposed to be a pleasant one today, up around 80 almost, and then get colder this weekend. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show... Oh, no, we didn't. Here we go. We titled the show Living Material Design and Manufacturing, Merging Biology and Machine. And at the very end of the show yesterday, because we've had some technical difficulties now 3 days in a row with Skype and Windows 10. And I'm going to tell you, I just saw, just before I went to bed last night, that the reasons why I don't install updates were very apparent to me. See, I had a friend who worked as my network administrator for a lot of years, and that friend is my network administrator for 13 years. Had actually been my coworker for about five before that. He was one of my buddies I used to chuck paper clips over the cube to back when we were techs way, way, way back. But he had always told me that he refused to install the updates from Windows and any operating system when they first came out, because when you have many, many, many locations, many employees, many different devices, you have updates come out constantly, they tend to screw things up. And so I saw yesterday a story come through. I don't know, I was doing a search on something. And there was a whole string of stories that came through just from a day or two ago about people bitching in the forums about the newest Windows 10 upgrade and having to reverse it. And I guess there's a big rigmarole you got to go through. And it could potentially have damaged some data or something. And I don't know. In the old days, we used to just go in to add and remove programs and we just uninstall the update. But... I guess you have to do rollbacks or whatever. But I guess it screwed things up. So their telemetry, you know, I told you that it's filled my hard drive of the Skype server. They're like, free up space. Well, the only thing I have on that machine is Skype. It's, mind you, it's one of those little mini $200 mini computers. But that's all we need, right? What do I need? A full-blown PC, and I mean, it is a full-blown PC. It's got everything. It just doesn't have a huge amount of hard drive space, maybe 500 meg or 400 meg, something like that. But all I needed is for Skype. Well, the Windows updates have loaded that hard drive, and there's no way to turn them off. I found out also in the bowels when I was trying to, like, deal with this issue back a few days ago that these new Windows 10 PCs, and I'm going to say it's all of them because it was an operating system level setting. These Windows 10 machines have a setting by default to take the updates that are coming in from Microsoft and push them out to other devices on your network. Now, that's where we're going to start today. So Microsoft has infiltrated, and they've infiltrated for 25 years now. It's about every desktop on the planet, not all of them. You get little pockets of people who thought like we did about the Chinese. You don't want to let them in the back door. It's like the Trojan horse. And once they're in, then they can open all their little Swiss Army knives of surveillance technology or whatever the hell else they're doing on the back end, scraping, scrimping. I noticed, too, I just mentioned this to a friend the other day. I don't know. He probably thinks I'm really paranoid, but... You know, when you get these intermittent slowdowns, sure, it could be the internet. It could just be your provider. You might just have a bad port or lots of traffic going on in your neighborhood. But when you start to notice it consistently, and here's the one thing that I've noticed, I start to get these slowdowns or out-and-out service outages like, oh, no internet found. Nope. Not here. You're looking in the wrong place. There's no internet. I mean, what? Out of the blue, I'm sitting here. I'm in the middle of doing something. Nope. No internet found. And like any link I go to, except that Skype's still online. If I go to Firefox, I can get online, but just not Google Chrome. Nope. Google Chrome tells me the internet went and took a vacation. It's in the bathroom right now. Can't be bothered. Hey, what is that? But not only does that happen on my PC, but then I'll go to my phone. I'll go to my phone and use, all right, well, let's use some 3G then. If wireless isn't working and apparently Google isn't working, let's go to the phone. I go to the phone and I have zero 3G connection. Circle with a line through it. Now, it could be solar storms. You know, I'm not gonna rule that out. If you get a good K5, go out to my Earth and Sky Tools page that I built many, 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 many years ago. It's out on UCY's homepage still. You'll see Earth and Sky. There's a KP index there, and it measures, I don't know, plasma, whatever type of particles are coming down after we have some sort of disturbance on the sun and blast solar rays in our direction and particles. High energy, by the way. And it can affect your radio frequencies. It can affect connectivity. That's, you know, if we ever had some sort of massive sun event that then penetrated our magnetic field on the planet. This is one of the things, you know, when we started talking about plasma bombing the sky with the Air Force and extending the radio frequencies and all kinds of different things, that was one of the things that concerned me. When we have, I can't even remember what they're called, when the sun goes, you have these big blasts. I don't know, guys, it's early and it's been a long week. I've just had so much stuff going on and all these things personally that have had deadlines that I've had to get dealt with, like, by the end of midnight tonight. So it's just been really hectic, and I haven't started anything for the weekend yet, and the kids are off tomorrow and Monday, so just not been a good 24 hours or so, maybe 36. But anyway, when they're talking about now, let's get back to the Internet of Everything, where we were a few days ago and even a few weeks ago. This plasma bombing the sky, they want to put high energy particles into the upper atmosphere to be able to extend radio connectivity, radio ability to send waves for longer distances. Except that when we have a solar storm, a lot of times some of those storms are plasma storms. I mean, you can look, there are different types of high energy particles that stream toward the Earth, depending on what the source is, but our magnetosphere protects us from those things. When you start messing around with the magnetosphere, when you start messing around with things called, oh, I don't know, CERN, Large Hadron Colliders, spinning large colliders around and making explosions bigger than any explosion ever witnessed by a living creature that is anywhere within the vicinity of us, out in outer space, and we're doing it on the planet. You gotta wonder if it isn't going to affect our magnetic field, our, I don't know, some sort of science we don't understand yet. I mean, if you can't see it, it doesn't matter. Well, I just saw a story, and I'm like pulling this off the top of my head. I don't know. I'm kind of lost right now. Not really, but I'm trying to put my dots together. I had a panic already this morning and no more issues. So thoughts are disjointed for the time being. But I saw a story about some new technology that they just developed out of a Large Hadron Collider. And I'm trying to remember what it was, but they're exporting it to space. And it was so amazing. And they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I sent it to Lonnie. We were talking about whether or not they've ever been able to create, and this will be a good segue. That's all I had to find was a segue. They have, for many years, told us that they've had space travel, that they have gone to the moon. Except that Fred and I really dug into this for a while. He insisted that it was all bullshit. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Come on. I saw with my own two eyes. Just like my mom said about the films on 9/11. She saw with her own two eyes planes hit the building, so it must be true. But, I mean, maybe the planes hit the buildings, but I don't think that it was exactly the way it happened that they said it happened. Anyway, just because you see it doesn't mean that you understand the circumstances behind what is going on. Seeing is not always believing. You can be faked. So we looked pretty deep into the moon landing and some of the issues and some of the heights right now that the space station is floating around at. We discovered that, yeah, that space station is floating within the magnetosphere. The space station isn't outside the magnetosphere. It's inside the magnetosphere, which is going to keep you safe. At least partially safe in the event of any type of not only huge solar storm, but also from the very dangerous high energy waves that exist in outer space. I mean, we got gamma waves and X rays and plasma storms, and I absolutely do not propose to be a physicist or an astrophysicist in any way, shape, or form, but I've learned enough about it and I've taken enough classes, took enough physics in college, and I had the rocket scientist boyfriend back then. And he actually took the astronomy class with me, so I had my tutor sitting right next to me all the time. But I most certainly, I mean, it's been a lot of years, but I pay attention. So anyway, if we look, though, at the space station and where it is and the fact that it's still within our magnetosphere, so they are protected. If we look at some of the Russian launch films from the 60s, when, of course, we declared that we were going to be the world power, and how we got there was by being the first people, men, as they said, men on the moon. And the question has arisen after there were some discrepancies between some of the photos I just saw recently. It was the first time ever. I don't know if they released the promo photos just recently for some inaugural thing for a museum, but they were like for the history of the space program, and they released these high quality photographs, black and white photographs of the moon landing. And, you know, there are people that have been obsessive over the moon landing and proving that it was quote-unquote fake or not fake for a lot of years, just like there are people who dedicate themselves to JFK and the assassination or to proving false flags. I mean, there are people out there. It's that red button issue. When you push that red button, especially if you've done tons of research and you've been in the back end and you know every single detail. So when you look at something and you are like a bloodhound that you could see something awry because you've seen a million different versions of the same picture, or the same story or whatever, you know, those people sometimes can come off as tinfoil hat wearing lunatics. But I'm going to tell you what, sometimes as we're finding over and over again, some of the stuff that a long time ago, those of us who've tucked our little tinfoil hat away in the bedside table, we pull it out for parties. I'm going to tell you what, it's come up quite a number of times now as we've been doing this show, that stuff back even five years ago that I was like, whoop, whoop, yeah, okay, you know, lunatic on the horizon, quick turn, go the other direction, he's coming type person has actually ended up being right, that there was a thread there to pull, and that even though it sounded so fantastical, doesn't mean that there wasn't some sort of elaborate deception going on. Well, the moon mission, I told you, my friend, insisted to me that it couldn't possibly be real. So we started looking at some of the statistics. How high the space station is in the sky. And yeah, if you look it up even on Wikipedia, it's still within the magnetosphere. So they're not outside that protective layer. But if you go back to the Russian films with the animals, you know, it's like a microwave oven out there outside that magnetosphere. You got monkeys and dogs who ended with some pretty horrifying fates back in those days. And the question is, back in 1965 or 66, 67, where on earth did they get that technology to be able to provide a radiation shield? Back in those days, probably lead. They didn't weigh 10 bazillion pounds, but that was thick enough to prevent gamma radiation from getting inside and roasting them whole. I don't see how that's possible. Lead is extremely heavy, and they just had little rockets. I mean, they were pretty powerful rockets, but they were rockets just the same. And that was a lot of lead to be shipping up to space. We talked yesterday about living material design and manufacturing, some of these shape-shifting programs by DARPA. We heard the very first excerpt, DARPA, Voices from DARPA podcast yesterday, from a chemist, a chemical engineer, who focuses on organic chemistry. He's a program manager now of one of their make it programs, it's called. And they are finding ways to engineer materials at a molecular level now. We read a story way back about DARPA wanting to terraform Mars. And that was kind of the push for their synthetic biology program and why it was so wonderful and why we're going to be able to create molecules to create life at the push of a button by splicing and splicing X, Y, Z. Actually, XY is going to be a part of it. That's that new synthetic, those synthetic amino acids. But to be able to create life on the fly, to do what we need it to do, and clean up areas of the planet. Don't worry, we're not going to screw up Mars. We're going to try it on planet Earth first to clean up some of those areas that are completely untouchable right now that we have screwed up beyond belief. But as we were reading, it really struck me with these new programmable matter projects to create shape-shifting materials. And we found out it was going to be robots, and it was going to be houses and all these other things, but that they were literally going to integrate organic material, the building blocks of life, into these rigid structures, so your house, just like your body, could respond to environmental stimuli. And in that one story, they were talking about bone and skin or something. I mean, it was very frightening. Create a house out of bone or skin or bark. DARPA wants to build homes out of living biological materials. You know, I really don't think people have grasped that concept yet, because that concept is so foreign. That concept is so out of any index card your brain has ever made and found a place to file. Floop, living houses, living cars. We saw that in some science fiction movies. Farscape, anyone who was ever a fan of that, Ben Browder. It was an Australian production. If you've never seen it, I would highly recommend looking it up. I think it was 4 or 5 seasons. Kind of saucy. Lots of amazing costumes, but definitely the guy who was responsible for costume design and writing the script was probably a little deviant, let's put it that way. But it was a great series. It really was. Once you got into it and the characters, like, it just all totally made sense. But they lived in this living ship called Moya. Moya was the spaceship. It was this living organism. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a really bizarre old concept, like this living piece of machinery. But like the story we were reading yesterday, and this was from 2016. This isn't some old, like, dusty, crusty story from 2007 where DARPA already did it and then buried it under the covers. Oh, no, they're working on this right now. They are looking to build homes and objects out of living organic material that they've been able to program. So when we heard that project manager interview, Voices at DARPA interview yesterday, we discovered that, yeah, he's literally, they are able to play God. He is able to take the base level of chemicals, figure out how and what an object is comprised of. He said you could put it like through a computer. How amazing. How amazing. We can scan it. We can get the makeup. We can save it to a computer. We can put it in the cloud. And then just like the internet, all these other labs can access the plan. This again is that hive learning. Except we're talking about like the building blocks of life here. We're talking about creating organic molecules that comprise everything. And then mixing and matching. Once they're up there in the cloud, they've been democratized, to use that horrifying word. That word that means, according to the head of national intelligence, as he testified in front of the Armed Services Committee, that democratization of the ability to splice and dice and create your own life and play God has actually created a new generation of weapons of mass destruction that some lunatic or megalomaniac in his garage or mommy's basement can create something that could potentially wipe out large segments of life on this planet by making some sort of big mistake, whether it be intentional or unintentional, and damage us at a core root level of what makes matter. Now, we saw the military has been messing around now with all these new types of pulse weapons that literally was out of Reuters did that story. They are investing in huge amounts of pulse and energy weapon technology. And we found out that terahertz was part of it and a lot of other things. But the terahertz can unzip DNA, we discovered, right? There was that study out of 2009 from Los Alamos Laboratory in a collaboration with a scientist out of MIT. And guys, if they can unzip DNA... And I had read about this, I think, way back when I was remembering. Because we've been postulating that if they unzip DNA, like, en masse, what would happen to the creature whose DNA was all unzipped? Right? Turn into a gelatinous mass? Is that what would happen? I mean, can they just aim these things down from space? Because they are looking to put this technology on satellites, guys, little CubeSats. They wanted to use this terahertz millimeter wave technology to boost the new 5G that's going to be launched to tie this Internet of Everything together in the sky that will enable all these little pinpoint endpoint devices to communicate with each other and back to the cloud. But once we have a technology like this in space where they can beam down frequencies that literally will unzip the building blocks of life, we definitely have a big problem. But don't worry about it, because we have problem reaction solution. You know, those frequencies, they're not going to hurt you too much. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain doing the study that got buried way back when, and he was no Yahoo. These are people at like Lawrence Livermore and MIT. People in the know, and somehow, some way, this report just kind of eked out, accidentally on purpose, about being able to unzip things with this new technology. But we don't want to give away the store, because we could build new life. We could put new sequences in where they got unzipped. That's where CRISPR comes in. And CRISPR's made it just so wonderfully easy to be able to splice and dice life and make it the way we want it. We can do just about anything. We're going to start CRISPRing the planet. And then CRISPRing other planets in the name of terraforming in the future. One of the things I talked about yesterday is if we can come up with some sort of radiation shield that'll get us outside of the magnetosphere. There's lots of research on it now. You know, one thing that was another one of those defining moments of my friend trying to convince me that maybe we really didn't do all the things that we've said that we've done in space up until this point. Maybe it was just Disney magic. Because remember, Wernher von Braun was working very closely with Walt Disney. Even if you go back to the 50s, long before the space program. And if at that time there was anybody alive that might be able to fake it, at least for 1960s standards, with their special effects and all their magic futuristic stuff that they could pull off, it would be Walt Disney. Walt Disney and Wernher von Braun had done a whole series. I don't remember what the name of the series was, but you can, I'll link to one of them. There's a whole series out there back from the 50s into the 60s that was sponsored by Disney. And it was all about the wonders of space and the wonders of Mars, literally. Like, they did all what life on Mars is going to look like, and let's all go to the future. I mean, they really pushed this stuff. But to be able to fake that moon landing convincingly, something which experts now, I saw a bunch of interviews not too long ago, and there's some skeptical experts out there who were saying at the time, like back in 1965 or 64, when Kennedy came out and said we're going to send a man to the moon, we were nowhere near, technically speaking, that capability. And within 2 short years, we managed to go from 0 to 60 and have it all worked out and get the ships made and set them up there and get the whole radiation problem taken care of with all the huge amounts of lead and get them on the moon and bring back rocks and do 16 missions or whatever the hell we did. And they were like, there's no freaking way that they got that all figured out in just 2 short years. But by convincing everyone at the time that we did, that put the United States as the big, dirty, kind of half rotten cherry on top of everything. And we said, hey, we just planted our flag and we are the top dog now. We are the world's superpower. We have conquered space. We're going to put satellites up there and we can spy on you. You know, psychologically, the space program served a huge purpose. But what I'm seeing in a lot of these stories now, we have a huge push right now by tech billionaires, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. I saw Amazon CEO, and he's got the whole Origin line. He got Virgin Galactic with Branson. I saw that he's coming back. You know, they had a couple crashes, but he's going to come back and get it all again. Now, Virgin was the one who I'm pretty certain wanted to create the Playboy in space. Playboy Mansion, which just got sold a few months back. Half sold it to his neighbor for a few million dollars. Quite a number of million. It was all grossy. I read 1970s and sticky. But yeah, Virgin Galactic wants to create Playboy Mansion in the sky. So too, there's that little inflatable sidekick unit that they made and sent up and have inflated on the International Space Station for visitors to go visit. But eventually, the United States has announced that they want to abandon that International Space Station. It's taken an entire generation to construct. I mean, I think we're doing pretty good up there. We got people from all over. Since we dumped our commercial space program, we have had to depend upon other countries for us to get supplies and people up there potentially, because we had some failures on this end. That was kind of where the commercialization of space has been allowed to get a foothold. But since then, we've seen now they gave the first private mining company rights to go mine the moon starting next year to exploit it for resources, minerals. And there was a whole body of groups that think they're in charge of the moon here in the United States. I mean, how do we claim the moon? Because we said we were there. China, India, Russia all have missions planned. China's had some satellites up there already. I don't know if they had a lander or not yet, but I know that they've been taking some high-resolution images. India actually sent a probe to Mars. And when China first sent their thing up to the moon, I'd read a few stories. They wanted to prove that we'd never been there, which was amusing, since that was what quote-unquote conspiracy theorists have been saying for a long time. But I've seen now with some of these new nanomaterials, I was reading about graphene the other day, but I also ran across a story where some of the technology from the Large Hadron Collider using large rotating magnets to create some sort of gravitational field and a magnetic field around the spaceship would be a way that they are now considering making a radiation shield. So it's not even going to be a physical material in the walls. Like, they're talking about making an artificial magnetosphere for some of these new first manned missions outside of our magnetosphere. Interesting, interesting concept. If you guys remember 2001 Space Odyssey from way back when, Stanley Kubrick. And there's, I don't know, look up Stanley Kubrick and some of the psychological mumbo jumbo that he was feeding people in those movies. I don't know. There was a lot of interesting stuff going on back in those days. But they utilized a rotational central piece to the spaceship spinning. I don't know if they did it the opposite direction with the other one, but it was almost like a gyroscope. And it created a magnetic field that then not only protected them from radiation, I'm assuming, but also helps contain the oxygen and the livable space within it, just like we have here on the planet, again, copying similar natural technologies that have been formed here on Earth to be able to get off this rock. So, question is, when we talk about space travel, I know people laugh and think that it's ridiculous, but it really isn't. Because as we start taking a look every day at the stuff that we cover on this show, we start realizing how bleak the future could potentially look if these technologies of mass destruction, the tinker with the building blocks of everything that exists today, could potentially go wrong or go bad very easily. And screw things up. And, you know, I started thinking, too, about how a few years ago they started collecting seeds and putting them up in the seed vault in Svordok, Norway, or wherever the hell it is. And they started creating the Noah's Ark of genes for DNA as they're sequencing and databasing all the code for living organisms everywhere. I was like, oh, how nice. Yeah, to do this de-extinction thing, right? We talked about that a few weeks ago. You know, as we're in the sixth great extinction on this planet and everything's starting to wind down, screwed up by all the shit that the rich elite have messed with for years and didn't really care how badly they were damaging things, we see that they have all these unadulterated seeds, quote-unquote seeds, seeds of life, food seeds, human seeds, plant seeds, animal seeds, fungi seeds, insect seeds, all those things that would be required to reseed a new utopia. And it makes you really wonder, like, how far could they go with this? Now, they've been on this search for a new Earth for quite a while. There's a few planets now in that Alpha Centauri, just a hop, skip, and a jump away. I think we read it was only 4 light years. Which is incredible that it's that close. We have Stephen Hawking, Mark Zuckermucker, and this rich Russian billionaire. They're all going to be funding their own series of CubeSats to send them to go start investigating some of these potential new worlds in Alpha Centauri very shortly. We have the United States announced last year that they're going to get off the International Space Station and abandon it, which I had the same feelings when Obama announced he was abandoning the space shuttle. I mean, the space shuttle was so near and dear to my heart. They sent a teacher into space when I was a kid, and it was a big deal. Then that sucker blew up. That was very sad for a lot of people. It was like our 9/11 of that day. It was a space program. It was something we had a lot of pride in. Space shuttle was a beautiful piece of machinery that could do things that we had never seen before. You know, that space shuttle was created with a baby space shuttle. It was like that X-37 little docking space shuttle that went into that belly bay of the actual space shuttle. And what that X-37 was originally designed for was to shuttle people and supplies from the actual big space shuttle to the International Space Station. And when they mothballed and took it for the very last time, very slowly, to the Smithsonian, that space shuttle, the big one, that little X-37 didn't go with it. No, that little X-37 went from NASA to the Air Force. Well, the Air Force, yeah. To the Air Force. And right after that, I have this little tool, and actually it is on my Earth and Sky Tools on UCY's page. There's a little tool where you can track every satellite that they allow us to track in the sky. Just plug in its number, and I think that X-37's secret mission number was like an OV-something. But if you can get the actual name, call sign of the satellite, the object in the sky that's being tracked, you can plug that in and track its route real time, and they'll show you where it is at all times. Well, what had happened is once that little X-37 had moved over to the Air Force, they sent it on a secret mission, and he said it was a secret mission. They weren't going to tell you what it was all about. And they put it up there, and it broke all kinds of records for being the longest that they had ever had some sort of unmanned craft up there flying around. And at first I thought, well, it is a lot like a drone. It's got little wings on it, and it can fly around up there. But I also found some evidence, and there were correlations that people were making, and it was interesting, I have to say. When you took two data sets and one was the location, real time, of where this little mini X-37 on a secret space mission was, and the USGS earthquake feed, which also was pretty real time, there seemed to be some correlations as to where this X-37 was and where we had disturbances on the ground in earthquakes. So there's a lot of postulation that potentially this could be their first foray with an autonomous vehicle loaded with antennas. There was some sort of connectivity device from some of these high oral research programs that they're messing around with, beaming high energy waves into the sky to be able to excite the atmosphere, to be able to extend communications and do whatever they're doing with some of this technology that we find out from Reuters just a few weeks ago, the government is dumping tons and tons of research dollars into. That X-37 ran on two or three secret long-term missions, and then DARPA took control of it. That was also when DARPA went in for one of the very last experiments at HAARP in Alaska, right before they were, quote unquote, shutting it down, if you remember that. And then, of course, University of Alaska took it over. Now it's all A-OK. Don't worry about it. They're going to run it. Shh. We're not doing anything secretive up here. I don't know, guys, because now we have these CubeSats and plasma bomb in the sky and all this other crazy stuff. I really think that this is all connected. Synthetic biology is now the next piece of this. DARPA, we are engineering the organisms that will terraform Mars. Now, this comes just a year before the story titled DARPA Wants to Build Homes Out of Living Biological Materials. Like I said yesterday, going out into space, we will not be able to load space shuttles or whatever new dragon capsules, if you're looking at some of the commercial trips that have been going on up to space. We will not be able to load capsules with buildings or all the raw materials or even stuff to make a factory to send them up to another heavenly body to kick off the colonization, the imperialized takeover, and eventual destruction of another planet. So the only way, if we really, really want to colonize things, would be to come up with a way to do desktop manufacturing, to come up with a way to take raw materials at a molecular level and use them to build things. Well, lo and behold, not only has DARPA come up with a way to terraform Mars utilizing synthetic biology, databasing all the living creatures on the planet, so they can push a button, take traits from this one and that one, and boop, create life on the fly, but they have been able to now take that creating life on the fly and integrate it into inorganic things to be able to make biological living materials to build houses and things like that. So, guys, we've come a long way in just a few years, at least on the books. And they're really pushing to get off this rock. When you start thinking, why are they really pushing to get off this rock? It's because they are really pushing to get off this rock. This rock is broken. And this rock is going to get even more broken as they are allowing these technologies to be democratized and spread everywhere. So we have DARPA now, who is the, I've always said DARPA is kind of like the yin and the yang with NASA. And they are. It's the secret evil science program that includes space. It's no secret that the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency is investing heavily in genetic engineering and synthetic biology. Whether that excites or terrifies you depends on how you feel about the military engineering totally new life forms. If you are in the excitement camp, however, here's a nugget for you. DARPA believes that it is on its way to creating organisms capable of terraforming Mars into a planet that looks more like Earth. The goal of terraforming Mars would be to warm up and potentially thicken its atmosphere by growing green, photosynthesizing plants, bacteria, and algae on the barren Martian surface. It is a goal that even perpetual techno-optimists like, we're going to talk about Elon Musk, doesn't think is it going to happen anytime soon. And mind you, the story was from June of 2015, and here we are just a year later, and Elon Musk is announcing that not only does he have his SpaceX's first mission to Mars already in his sights, but he's planning, this is what he says, on exporting up to 1 million people from planet Earth in order to save humanity. And this is what he said. This is just a year later, and send them to Mars. So anyway, Elon Musk says it isn't going to happen anytime soon. At least a year ago, he said that. But that is a goal that DARPA apparently already has its eyes on. Quote, for the very first time, we have a technological toolkit to transform not just hostile places here on Earth, like where we've polluted horribly, but to go into space, not just to visit, but to stay, says Alicia Jackson, deputy director of DARPA's new, and I talked about this office yesterday, Biological Technologies Office. And as she said this, Jackson was pointing at an artist's rendition of a terraformed Mars. So what is this technological toolkit that she is talking about? Well, for the last year, Jackson's lab has been learning on how to more easily genetically engineer organisms of all types, not just E. coli and yeast, which are the most commonly used in synthetic biology projects. Oh no, we're going to go all in. There's anywhere from 30 million to 30 billion organisms on Earth. We use just two right now for engineering biology, she said. Think about that. Think about the exponential insanity. We're only working with two, and we got weapons of mass destruction right now, potentially. But we have 29 million to 29 billion to 0.99999 organisms on this earth that we can splice and dice and mix together. Alicia says, I want to use any organism that has the properties I want, and I want to quickly map it, map in the genome, and then quickly engineer it, creating some sort of slice, dice, mix, and match. And if you look at the genome annotation software already today, it's not built to quickly find engineering to be able to make systems and genes. It is looking for an esoteric and interesting thing. And they want to publish a paper on it. But they're not looking for real-world solutions. So DARPA and some of its research partners have created now a software called DTAGView, which Jackson is calling the Google Maps of Genomes. This torrent of genomic data we are now collecting, she says, I told you guys they're collecting it on everything, is awesome. In a bad way, at least for us. Except they sit in databases, and that's where they remain as data, not as knowledge. And very little genetic information we have is really actionable. But with this new DTAGView, Google Map of Genomes, the goal is to, within a day, a single day, to seek and find where I can best engineer an organism. Now, over the last few days, we had read stories about DARPA and other federal agencies doing research on how to take artificial intelligence and actually put some reasoning capability into it so it could work on things on the fly and determine its environment and come up with the best solution without any type of human intervention. That almost sounds like what she's also talking about. Once we've taken all that database DNA data, and the parameters for an environment that you maybe wanted them to thrive in, and maybe even future parameters for what you wanted them to produce as an end result that might, oh, I don't know, terraform a planet, like creating oxygen as a waste product and have it spit you out some creatures that might be able to do that. Says the utility of having such a capability is pretty astounding. Jackson threw out the goals of eradicating vector-borne illnesses. Yeah, well, shape-shifting immune systems. But perhaps even more interesting is DARPA's plan to try to use this technology to not only practice on Earth fixing damaged landscapes and making them hospitable for life again. But she also thinks that we will have what it takes to eventually colonize our solar system. Imperialism! Let's go stick a flag on Jupiter. Actually, it would fall in. Jupiter's a gas planet, but you know what I mean. Maybe Europa. They think Europa really does have liquid water. We talked about that last week. It says, Jackson said that after a natural or man-made disaster, it might be possible to engineer new types of extremophile organisms. And that's kind of the new name that they are putting on things, extremophile. Does that mean they're going to have fangs and wings? Does that mean that we're going to have some sort of hybrid that's designed for a special purpose at an extreme level, capable of surviving in a scarred wasteland like the Earth apparently is going to end up being? And why these rich tech billionaires who are all putting their money into longevity medicine and living forever, going to Mars or Europa or Alpha Centauri. I mean, it's just crazy. Really makes you wonder. And here, as we could get closer and closer and closer to World War III, and we got Syria and the United States breaking off diplomatic ties and pulling out of nuclear agreements, and we find out from Libby's, I looked at some of Libby's description for her show with this new interview she had. Oh, yeah, we got nukes in space as well, all pointed down at certain parts of the globe. Makes you wonder why they're not putting lots of time and effort into getting off this rock. All right, it is official. We are going to Mars. A bipartisan bill was passed by the U.S. Senate, and this was just a few days ago, September 23rd, so a week or two, that oversees NASA space projects. This bill will now allocate $19.5 billion in funding to NASA in 2017, but it is a critical mission for the space agency, send men to Mars. Looks like Republican and Democrat senators alike are keen on safeguarding America's space programs. And with the potential chaos of a new president on the horizon, the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation passed a bipartisan bill giving NASA $19.5 billion with a B dollars to continue working on a mission to Mars. And I was reading some other stories when I was looking at Elon Musk leasing some of the old spaceports from NASA. And he's got a couple now. Kennedy Space Center, and he's working in the one in, I think it's New Mexico. And then he built one in eastern Texas as well, I think. I think that was his. We got Bezos working out of Southwest Texas. I don't know. I think Virgin Galactic was working out of Nevada in the desert there. Mojave. But there's a lot of programs going on. And Musk is collaborating, as well as others, with NASA on this technology. This is how they always figured, after they got rid of our space shuttle program, that they were going to do it. They were going to allow commercialization of space. That's what I said way back when, as to another reason why I personally, when I sat back and thought about it, I personally call bullshit on the past space program, because after 40, almost 50 years of space travel, we're a very consumeristic society. And the Western world likes to capitalize on everything. And if we'd been to the moon all those different times, you know, nothing more to see there. We haven't gone back in all these years. Wouldn't you think that some enterprising individual corporation would have decided to build a Disney World up there? I mean, honestly, I'm almost 50. This happened right before I was born. Almost 50 years of quote-unquote having gone to the moon. We haven't done anything up there. We haven't sent any more people up. We haven't built anything. We haven't commercialized it. Doesn't that seem odd? I think so. I think we should have had Space 1999 back 30 years ago. But we don't. Why? Why is that? There's no good reason that I can find. Anyway, so we have funding now from a congressional level just passed a few weeks ago for $19.5 billion to go to Mars. We have Jeff Bezos, and these all came out right on the same time. This is the very day before they passed that bill. So, he didn't know anything about it. Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, he also owns the Washington Post now, has revealed his ambitious plan for colonizing our solar system. In an interview with his own paper, the Washington Post, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos reveals what he thinks will be the future of humanity when we eventually colonize space, nuclear reactors in space, populations in the millions, and more. Well, you know, now finding out that we already have nuclear weapons in space. Nuclear reactors in space sound like such a great idea. While Elon Musk SpaceX is in the public face of the private space industry, Musk is everywhere, there are other major players trying to bring humanity closer to the stars. Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic is working on its own rocket technologies, and Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, has been revealing more on the work that they are doing over at Blue Origin. The previously secretive Blue Origin has been announcing more of its milestones in the space ambitions. Remember, they've been sending satellites up there for who knows who and working together with different agencies, including NASA, very closely, utilizing spaceports and scientists and technologies and sending up payloads. This is a big, happy, butt-patting club. And these guys are all tech billionaires. These tech billionaires are planning exit stage left. In the interview, Bezos sees humans spreading across the solar system, and he envisions millions of people working and living in space. But to do this, he knows that we will have to figure out how to extract and manage resources that we get from space, since Earth won't be able to provide the materials for space colonization, and that sets us up for developing organic living materials. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody.